Welcome back to Top Ends with Twins. In this episode, we're going to discuss premium assets, buy, holds, or sells, and just have some fun. Hey, Luke, do you hear that?
What is it?
It's Vinicius Jr. rolling by our house. He's still rolling from Madrid. Welcome back to Top Ends with Twins, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
If y'all didn't, there were Champions League games today, so had a little inspiration for the opening of the podcast. But we're here to talk about FPL, so Luke, let's just go into it. This could be long-winded, everybody, but Luke's going to tell us about his FPL performance team last week.
Game week 10, I ended up on a total of 44 points. The average was 39, so I did have a slight green arrow, which is the first slight green arrow in what feels like years.
It's been 84 years.
But I mishandled my team this week, big time.
Join the club.
I decided that the proper move for my team was to take Solanke out of the team, bring in Cunha. Cunha gets an assist, but as we all know, Solanke goes for the brace with an assist, so he ends up on a 16-pointer. And I did, going into the week, I knew I wanted Cunha, but sacrificing Solanke was something I did not want to do. Ultimately, I just made the decision to do so.
Should have sacrificed Haaland.
Should have, coulda, woulda. That's the story of my season. The FPL motto. And then another frustrating point in my team as well is that I'd Flecken locked in for a 12-pointer going in the 92nd minute, and Fulham said we have different plans, and Harry Wilson put in, you know, two incredible goals. Can't take anything away from him. What a performance coming off the bench. But Flecken went from a total of 12 points all the way down to 4. But the most incredible part of this is after the first goal, he was still on 3 bonus and another point for not conceding the second goal. So he lost 4 points on the second goal, which is just maddening. So ultimately, the best player in my team this week, Leif Davis, he gets the goal, loses the clean sheet in the 95th, 6th minute. You know, at this point, what is time? What does it mean?
Flat line.
And I also managed to bench Morgan Rogers 9 points. Yeah, so slight green arrow, but a horrible game week as far as I'm concerned. And I did Captain Haaland for his blank. So that's about how my week went. Paul, how was your week? Hopefully it was better than mine.
I think it was a disappointing week for me too. In a week where the average was 39, I had 43 points. And I basically had 2 returns in my team. So I had Salah, who was my captain, where he got the goal and then bonus points. And then I also had Jedi, who got an assist and not a clean sheet, so he was on 6. And the big kicker for me is I was kind of flashing back to last year, and I had Solanke on my bench with 16 points, which,
ouch. Yeah,
I would love to hear people in the comments or just on Twitter, any discourse you want to have with us, that do you think it's worse to have Solanke on your bench or to transfer him out? Because me and Luke are both feeling pain with Solanke, and I think it may be equivalent. I don't know which one's worse though, you know.
The good thing for you is that you still have him in your team for next week.
Yeah, Ipswich at home is good.
That's
for sure.
That's the shining light amongst all that, I think, Paul. But we do hope that you do not continue this trend, because last season, benching points was your MO throughout the course of everything we were doing in FPL for that season. And we don't want that to continue, because that's just painful as an FPL manager.
Yeah, I was top 100K last year. I would have finished easily top 100K if I would have, if those points on my bench would have been on my team. So we won't spend too much time on that. But I think overall, really low scoring week. It's interesting. There's been a lot of low scoring weeks lately. It's just, I guess, the layout of FPL right now, and kind of, I guess, where the goals and assist and like the clean sheets are hard to find. So I think we're just kind of struggling right now as FPL managers to find consistent results. But I mean, there are consistent results, but a lot of it is just kind of at the mid-tier level, Luke.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to go into the premium assets a little bit more in greater detail here in a little bit. But I really do find that this season, there's not a set template. And I think there's multiple reasons, right? Because there's lots of premium options. So people diversify their teams in that way. But we don't have midfield options outside of, say, Morgan Rogers, who are cheap, who are returning week in and week out. Mm-hmm. Right, there's a huge discrepancy there, and I think last season we had that across the board. Right, there were so many great options from even 6 million all the way up to 7.58, where you could put in 4 or 5 of those 8 million and they'd be just as good as the premiums are this season, and we just don't have that option right now. So it's every week is so different across the board. I don't know if you've noticed the same thing as well, Paul.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I think there's a lot of fluctuation with how players are performing. I mean, there's a couple assets like Chris Wood. He's consistently performing. I'd say Salah is kind of ticking away a little bit. But I mean, I think there's just been a lot of migrations in the beginning of the season to Haaland and kind of like the hat tricks. And then that's dried up. And the captaincy choices are kind of like, I guess, scrambled now because the last couple of years has just been Perma Haaland as a captaincy choice. So I think people are having to adapt. And I personally like that too, because I think it's more fun playing FPL where there's more variance. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think having players that consistently tick away at points is the best way to have the most consistency. Mm-hmm. And I think Mbomo is a good option too there. Like he's done well. I mean, he's struggled the last couple of weeks, I think, but he just feels like somebody that's always going to return. I don't know. It's tough though, because I mean, if you look at, like, I know earlier you mentioned you want to talk about Spurs attack a little bit, which we can kind of dive in that when we talk about premiums more. But I think some of these teams you're seeing that they're getting goals from different places in different matches, so that's kind of hard to predict. You know,
it is really hard to predict. And everyone out there who is getting ready for game week 12, we're gonna and. Good note here to mention that we do have an international break between game week 11 and game week 12.
And I'm so tired of all these international breaks.
Fortunately, this is the last one before we go into the real holiday season, which is such a fun time in FPL and just football in general. You know, people are out of work, out of school. There's more free time. I'm spending time with family, more time to watch football. And that makes it so enjoyable around this time of the year. And the games are coming thick and fast. So you got to be on your toes. You got to be ready to get your team in a place to where you have squad depth in case there are injuries that pop up. But you also have to be ready to dive into a midweek fixture when typically we've had Europe or we've had the Carabao Cup or EFL Cup being played midweek. So definitely an exciting time, and we're going to go into that next week in our podcast where we get you ready for that really enjoyable run of fixtures, but also challenging because there's a lot going on at that time.
Yeah, it's that's kind of the time where you really make or break your season, in my opinion, in FPL, is through the fixture run. If you've had a bad 10 game weeks, you can easily make that up in these run of fixtures because people get distracted, people don't pay attention to their teams, or honestly, with the congested fixtures, I mean, there's already congested fixtures anyways, but if more injuries happen, and it's kind of just like being able to adapt and problem solve, and especially plan is the biggest thing, you know, through the fixture
runs. Another thing about that too, that I think we should note when we're talking about this, and we'll talk about more next week, the consistency of playing in the same league actually does go decently far, in my opinion, because players, the level is established. They know that they're not traveling to, let's say, France to play in Europa League midweek, or going to Greece, or going to, you know, Croatia, right? All of that traveling does take a toll on players, and being able to have shorter duration trips, sleep in their own beds, I think it goes a long way.
Be around your family.
Yeah. But another thing we do have to consider with that, on the reverse side of the coin, is that a lot of teams who don't have midweek fixtures do have that now. Yeah. And someone like Ipswich, for example, if they pick up multiple injuries before that quick stretch of games, they don't have the squad depth to cover that.
Yeah, that's a great point, Luke, because if you bring up to a Luton fan when their season turned last year, it's probably the tail end of like the Christmas season whenever they just got
it was the
injury. And like, it's one thing for me to complain about Arsenal's injuries, but I mean, with the resources, the squad depth they have, it's manageable at times, you know, but like if you're Ipswich, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I completely agree.
You just don't have options, you know?
And here's the thing. Luton are in the championship right now. They're in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
That just shows how quickly things change in football. And these festive fixtures show that through and through, that you as an FPL manager, you have to be able to react quickly because things do change so fast. Let's look at City, for example. The last three fixtures, they've lost, which I could not tell you the last time that's happened. Yeah, Paul, calm down over there. Does Paul dislike more Vinicius or Man City? Who knows?
Man City.
After that intro, yeah, that's very true.
Man City, no doubt. That was just on the moment, Luke, you know?
Yes, understood.
Pop culture reference for everybody. But no, I hate Man City more, but go ahead.
Yeah, my point here, though, is that we need to be ready to adapt very quickly to how teams are setting up, to how they're approaching lower tier sides. There's a lot of variance here amongst Premier League teams, and keeping an eye on that to make sure that we are prepared as FPL managers is going to be the reason if you make it or break it going into the festive fixture. So
yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, Luke. And I think a good way to do that is to have maybe three or four players that you want to build a team around, you know, and then just start from there. So I think a good way to figure that out is just by deciding which premiums you think are viable and necessary to a team going forward. So I think we should go ahead and give people some input on that, Luke.
Let's do that.
Where would you like to start?
I think we work our way from the top down. So, and we'll go by cost. So the very first one, obviously, is going to be Erling Haaland. Haaland is currently sitting at 15.3 million in the game, selected by about 69% of the game. No pun intended there. And he's sitting on a total of 77 points. For the value that you're getting for his price, 77 points at this point in the season is not exactly what you'd be hoping for with how much you're paying for Haaland.
No.
With that little intro, I'm going to hand it over to you, Paul, and then I'll come back to my final thoughts. What do you think about Haaland? Is he a buy, keep, or sell?
Well, if I had the ability to, if he was in my team, I would sell him ASAP. I don't have him in my team, so I can't. But I would highly recommend people to get rid of Haaland because I think that it enables you to play the game in a different way. Like when you have that much money, I can't talk. You have that much money locked up in one asset, it just really limits the things you can do. And there's so many other great premiums that if you drop a little bit, I think you're giving yourself a lot more flexibility in teams. And I mean, if we look at City's next round of fixtures, they play Brighton away. they play Tottenham, Liverpool, and Nottingham Forest. And then going into 15, they play Crystal Palace, United, Villa. So, I mean, if you look at those fixtures up to 17, they do not. This is probably their most difficult. This is easily their most difficult stretch run of fixtures.
I don't know if it's their most difficult at this up to this point in the season. Definitely their most difficult.
Yeah, that's
because
what I mean.
If you look in 23 game week 23, they have Chelsea, then it goes Arsenal, Newcastle, Liverpool, Spurs. That's a really difficult stretch run of five fixtures there, but then it clears up beautifully right after that in 28. The rest of their 10 remaining fixtures are against probably low, I'd say like below the top six currently in the table.
But to me, I think for the next probably 4 to 5 game weeks, I mean, we're always running the risk when we don't own Haaland of him just going stupid and having like a hat trick and the next week having a hat trick. But I just don't think the City team, with the way they're currently playing right now, with their lack of creativity, it's just so evident how much they miss Rodri. Like they just can't break teams down whenever they're whenever they have those like really low blocks, like they're just struggling so much to do that, which I think Pep will figure it out. I mean, he's the best manager in the world for a reason. He has assets at this team to really like make that an easier process. He just has to figure out how he wants to do it. But to me, Haaland just isn't creating chances. And even when he has chances, he's not finishing them right now.
Yeah. I think that is an excellent side to be on, right? And you presented your points very well that City have a very tough run of fixtures coming up. They're struggling to break down a low block. If I knew that Kevin De Bruyne wasn't going to be back sometime soon, I for sure would sell Haaland. He's currently in my team. So my answer for Haaland as far as buy, keep, or sell, I'm going to say keep as of now. Because with Kevin De Bruyne coming back.
But how do we know when De Bruyne is going to be back? And do you think De Bruyne will even be able to play that big of a role in their attack? Because, I mean, I feel like when he comes back, I mean, he's probably going to be used like to a lower amount, you know?
His X minutes are down, yes. But I do think that Haaland with KDB is different than anyone else in City side. They have an understanding amongst each other, and Kevin De Bruyne sees passes that no one else does.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But is Haaland in good form right now? No, he's not. He is in a place where he's getting pretty good chances. And just today alone against Sporting, he has a penalty with a chance to make it 2-3 with about 30 minutes left. And he just sends it off the crossbar, right? He's just someone who's not in form right now. I don't think his confidence is quite shaken, but it's taking a hit. You can tell when he's out on the pitch. So I will leave it up to the individual managers. At the moment, he's a hold for me. That could change because there are plenty of other great options out there. And let's just say Erling Haaland is not Chris Wood. So I hated every piece of that sentence just now. So
yeah, that's
I do want that to be known that every week when I see Chris Wood score a goal, part of me dies.
I vomited my mouth a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Every time. It kills me every time. But
it's horrible.
Good for Chris Wood. It's incredible that he's in such great form, but it is frustrating to say the least. So, all right. So, Paul, you said Haaland is a sell. I have Haaland as a keep with the caveat KDB's back. Maybe a buy, in my opinion. What I want us to go to next is to go to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Mohamed Salah. Yes. Salah is currently the highest scorer in the game with a total of 93.
What?
He has 93 total points.
Yes.
Up to this point in the season. He's averaging 9.3 points per match, which is incredible. And he's sitting at 12.8 million pounds at the moment. Do you think Salah is a buy, sell, or hold?
I think if you don't have him, you should buy him right away.
Okay.
I'm just so high on Salah this year, and it's like, I think he just always turns up in those moments. Like the position he plays in that right wing, he is such a poacher's mentality that he always seems to find the right positions to get goals. Because I mean, he can be checked out of games. I mean, in the Arsenal match, he was basically checked out of that match. Like, he really was not. He did not. Like, if you watch that whole match, you're not like, oh, Salah had his fingerprints all over this match. Like, it's a vintage, whatever. But because he just drifts through matches a little bit, which I totally understand. But as an FPL manager, I mean, like, how do you not want somebody that's already on 93 points, 10 games in the season in your team, you know? And his price point at 12.8, it's not that crazy compared to other midfielders. So it's like, there's not a huge gulf. Like, it's not like Haaland where, like, if you have Salah in there, you don't have flexibility to build other teams too. And, I mean, we look at the run of fixtures. It's going to be a little more difficult because they play Villa at home. They play Southampton away. We will be there for that. That's probably a captaincy shout right there, especially Southampton playing at home. I think maybe more dangerous for Southampton than playing away.
You think they're going to be more courageous playing at home?
I would think so, which could really open it up for Salah. And we know what Southampton are going to be like this year with kind of playing their own brand of football, which is, I respect that. But like as an FPL manager with an attacking asset playing them, I kind of like that too, you know?
Yeah.
And then they play City at home. I think Salah could go kind of crazy in that match. I don't know. Just a kind of a thought there. And they play Newcastle away, which I think is going to be a tough fixture for them. I think that's probably the toughest one they'll have.
St. James is always a tough place to play.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Arsenal last weekend. They struggled. They couldn't create anything against Newcastle is what it felt like. I think this Newcastle match, sorry, just
no,
brief
go ahead.
Tangent. This was the one that really felt like there was the realization that, oh, Odegaard is not here.
Yeah, no, for sure. They just didn't have the build. I'm not going to sidetrack stuff, but we can talk about it later.
Yeah,
if we won't. But yeah, to me, it just feels like he is probably the asset to own an FPL right now. Bottom, underline, bold, highlight.
So he's a buy, in your opinion?
Yeah, whatever. Send it all.
Yeah, understood there. I would have to say I think I'm in a similar position. Because, one, I'm thoroughly impressed with how Slot has managed to come mm-hmm. into Liverpool and make some slight tweaks here to start out with, but he has Liverpool playing the brand of football that he likes to play. They're not as...
open.
What's the best way to say it? Open is one way to say it, but they don't press as high up the pitch. They're much more practical in how they approach the match. Mm-hmm. And I think that while Salah isn't getting those positions in the final third that he was with Klopp in the early days, when they would just press teams like crazy and they would turn them over, he's still getting plenty of great chances. And we know one thing about Salah. Usually he's going to be clinical. And that's why he can fade in and out of matches, as you were talking about, Paul, because he doesn't have to be locked in 90%, 100% of the time. To still return. I mean, he can mm-hmm. be all right for some of the match, and then he returns in the 75th minute because he gets one chance with an XG of 0.2.
Yeah.
That's just who he is, right? So there's a reason why people call him the king of FPL. That's just, it is who he is. Yeah. So in my opinion, I think he's a buy as well. And the second reason why I think that's true, so yes, he's in really good form. And I really like what Slot's built, but I do like their fixtures. I know they have City and Newcastle away. They have Spurs away, but I think Liverpool are getting to the point now of where they're a little fixture-proof. Because they've shown it week in, week out. Out of their last 12 fixtures across all competitions, they have won 11 of those 12 fixtures.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they only drew the one. They lost one. And that was to Nottingham Forest, which, how crazy is that? And then they did draw against Arsenal. But they've been incredible in the Premier League so far and equally as good in the Champions League against some pretty high-caliber teams. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at their run of fixtures going forward, I think we're going to see a lot over the next five, which we said that earlier, and they've done so well so far with this hard, tough run of fixtures where they're going to play Villa, Southampton, and then they play Real Madrid, Man City, and Newcastle away. So I think those three fixtures on the tail end of that run are really going to tell us a lot. And I have my own thoughts about Liverpool that I think they've been relatively pretty lucky so far this year with injuries and kind of like, I don't think they've had the problems that City and Arsenal have had. But I mean, if they can keep up their luck right now, it seems like it could actually really be a three-team title race. And Salah is obviously going to be a large part of that.
Yes, he will be. He will be. He's their talisman at the end of the day. And as we talked about, he fades in and out of matches sometimes, but they can rely on him.
So did Messi too. So,
and I do think Jota will be back after the international break from everything I've seen coming out of Liverpool's camp. Having him back is going to be really good for them because while Darwin has been better and, you know, shown up decently well in his performances while Jota's been out, Jota is so important how they play with the way that he presses and the pressure he puts on opposing teams, not to mention his intelligent runs in the box. And historically, he's been a clinical finisher. This year, he hasn't looked quite at that level. But I'm all on board for Liverpool, and I think Salah is a buy. So.
Yeah, we are in agreement with that, Luke. Where would you like to go next?
Well, we're going to go to the north, where it's ice, ice cold, too cold Palmer.
It's a rat boy fall, you know.
It's a rat boy winter.
We're getting closer to winter, I guess.
He's going through all the seasons at this point.
Yeah. But, Luke, why don't you go ahead and give us your thoughts on Cole Palmer?
Cole Palmer
buy
is currently,
hold or sell.
Currently priced at 11 million pounds. Started out the season at 10.5, so he's risen 0.5 million pounds. Averaging 8.2 points per match, with a total of 82 points and an ownership of 56%. That 56% ownership kills me every single week. Every week it gets
There's easily something you could do about it, Luke.
I know. And that's, we can touch on this later, but, and we'll talk about it next week during the podcast, but my wild card will be played very soon. And the team might be a little icy. That's all I'm going to say.
It's going to be a little chilly.
Here's the thing. Cole Palmer, his underlying numbers are really good. They're not pop off the board crazy, especially if you remove the fixture against Brighton, where he just went absolutely bonkers, crazy, wild, scored 25 points in one game week. If you take out that XGI of essentially what was 3, his numbers aren't incredible.
I mean, you're also forgetting to mention the game where he had, what, 3 assists versus Wolves too?
Yeah, but the XA, his XA in that match was 0.15 with 3 assists.
Yeah.
0.15. That is insane. He, out of his 3 assists, each one averaged an XA of 0.05.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I mean, Luke, but if you think about it too, I mean, if you just watch him play, like, there's always the numbers, all that stuff. But, I mean, think about the, what match was it? The one 2 weekends ago where he plays the ball to Neto, where he has basically the hockey assist.
Yes.
I mean, he's kind of like, I think, don't strike me down, but he's probably the closest thing we've seen to KDB in the Premier League to prime KDB.
In certain regards.
Like, his ball playing ability, I think, is up there.
What you just said was the point that I was working my way to.
Oh, sorry.
The fact that, yes, maybe the underlying numbers are not as great as we'd wish they would be, but it feels like he is going to return every single week. It doesn't matter who they're playing. If we think about Liverpool, for example, it felt like he should have returned in that match. If someone was going to return for Chelsea, it felt like it should have been Cole Palmer. Although he did not, and he ended up with 2 points, he still was in good positions, and it's all about positions. He is in those positions that he's a threat for getting assists, but also for scoring goals, and we know he's on pins too. So Cole Palmer, out of the premiums we've done so far, he is the most emphatic buy that I have up to this point.
Yeah. I for me, it's almost impossible to distinguish between Salah and Palmer, because to me, Palmer is the highest upside player in the game right now, just because Haaland's probably not in great form at the moment, but Salah's more consistent. So they're kind of like on both sides, different sides of the spectrum. But honestly, I think Palmer is such a good person to have in your team, because we've seen, I mean, he has the weeks where he can go for 17 points, 25 points. And if you have him in your team, and think about what ownership rate did you say he's at?
He's currently at 55.8%.
So he's at 55.8%. Think about last week, like the week where the average was what 32, 34, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I think it was 34. But I mean, if he has one of those performances, you're basically already almost there at the average. And yes, I mean, that's with 55% of other managers. But think about the other percentage the minority that don't own him. You already have that leg up. I think he just gives you so many good options going forward that he, to me, it's just really, I think it'd be really hard to not play the rest of FPL without him in your team.
With Palmer, I think we're going to get to the point probably, you know, game week 15 onwards, maybe a little bit later than that, where his ownership is going to be so high. You're going to have another Chelsea asset in order to really get a leg up. Similar to what we saw last year with Arsenal's defense, the people who went really early had, let's say, Saliba, for example. You had to get that second Arsenal defender to really have it make a difference in your team because the ownership was so high.
I think it's a great point, Luke.
I think we could see that with Palmer because the fixtures, we need to talk about their fixtures. Coming up, Chelsea do have Arsenal at home in game week 11. But after that...
That's a big L for Chelsea.
Following that, though, following the big L against Arsenal, they have an incredible run of fixtures going from game week 12 all the way to game week 22, which gets us to the 20th of January. That is a stretch run of 2 months where they have an incredible run of fixtures. And we know Cole Palmer is going to be at the heart of pretty much everything that's happening. If you don't have Cole Palmer in your team from game week 12 onwards, you got to figure out a way to get him in my opinion, because you're going to be terrified anytime Chelsea is playing that he is going to return. And I'm telling you now, he's going to return in these fixtures coming up because they are so, so nice. They're just great fixtures to own a Chelsea asset for. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
I agree with you, Luke. I think this is, this could be a little bit of a hot take, and I don't really want to say it, but it's a thought that entered my mind, that with that run of fixtures, if Chelsea are currently sitting fourth in the table at 18 points, and you have Liverpool, I mean, basically they're tied with Arsenal right now. If they win six of those seven, and we know Man City are faltering a little bit, there's a situation where after the festive fixtures, they could be top two in the table. Maybe top three.
Let's even say they managed to pull out 3 points against Arsenal in game week 11. That's a tough loss for Arsenal there, I think, because we never know how the table is going to shake out by the time we come near the final, you know, game week 36, 37. We have no idea what teams are going to be like then. But if you're giving up those 3 points to Chelsea now at this point, if you're Arsenal, you might be a little concerned about that. That might be a little hyperbolic, but it's just something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, it's let's not think about that reality. But I just a second, Luke's thoughts. I think Cole Palmer is probably one of the easiest buys in this game. I think he really is. Yep. Is based on all the points we've gone over.
Okay, so Cole Palmer, a very easy buy for both Paul and I. We're going to move on to Bukayo Saka.
Saka
is currently at 10.1 million pounds. He is averaging 7.2 points per match and sitting on an ownership of 25.4%. That ownership has really significantly dipped over the past 3 to 4 weeks. He did return against Liverpool. Very nice, tidy finish in the top corner. Mm-hmm. But out of his last three fixtures, he's blanked two out of those three, with Liverpool being the only return. So my question to you, Paul, do you buy, sell, or hold Saka?
So I'm just going to give you a little bit of... Basically, I think that if you have Saka right now, keep him in your team. If you don't have him, I would wait till after the Chelsea match. And probably after Nottingham Forest for West Ham going into 13, and then buy him because the run of fixtures get really good. Odegaard's going to be back. Saka's, I think, ceiling goes up so much higher when Odegaard's healthy and they have a functional creative. Like, honestly, the system that Arteta had to turn to with like Trossard and like Havertz is almost like false nines. Build as two false nines, sometimes with Trossard under him. Just really depends on how they were setting up for the match. I think that doesn't enable Saka to really do what he wants to do, you know?
Right.
And with Odegaard back, it's just going to be so much easier for him to find those little half spaces. And Odegaard and Saka have a great relationship. I think it just makes Saka's life so much easier, and the goals are going to be so much easier to find for him.
Completely agreed. Odegaard is the type of player that he passes players open because he sees the spaces before the players making the runs even see it themselves.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he necessarily does that for Saka. I'm sure he has at times, and I can recall sometimes. So yes, he does. Mm-hmm. But Saka is someone he needs people to interplay with.
Yes.
And not having Odegaard tucked into that middle right channel where he can interplay with Saka, and Ben White as well, who can overlap or invert, not having that relationship has really damaged Saka, but Arsenal as a whole. And like I was saying previously in the pod, against Newcastle, that became very readily apparent. And watching, you could see in other matches, but it felt like Arsenal was kind of running out of gas at this point.
Yeah.
Because
they didn't have answers.
They didn't have answers. And Newcastle set up tactically in a way that frustrated and made them just circle around that U, right? Without getting any actual possession in the middle of the pitch to be able to break them down. That's what every team is going to do if Arsenal does not have Odegaard. And the fact that Odegaard is coming back and hopefully stays fit, that makes Saka's potential exponentially higher with having Odegaard on the pitch. And seeing him at 25% ownership, that excites me if I know Odegaard's going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Odegaard's not going on international duty, which is great.
I think there may be a God.
I sent the tweet to Paul about Odegaard not going on to Norway for international break. And I think he was what, probably like at that point, 20, 30 miles away from me. I think I could hear him yell because he was so excited.
Yeah. Odegaard being back just changes things for Arsenal.
It does. Yeah. So all this being said,
go ahead.
In regards to Saka, having Odegaard back is the most important thing, in my opinion. With Odegaard back, Arsenal are fixture proof.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can return against anyone.
The defenders are better.
Specifically, I think Havertz and Saka can return against anyone if they have Odegaard. So, with that being said, I think Saka is a must-buy because he's at 25% ownership right now. That I would imagine it'll go up, right? Because the news of Odegaard is going to have a lot of people thinking this way. He'll probably, going into game week 12, he'll probably be around 35, maybe 30% ownership.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you're going to want to have him in your team. I know Forest have been good, but Arsenal are going to be out for blood come game week 12. So
yeah, when Odegaard gets back, I mean, I think the energy is probably going to shift a little bit already. But whenever Odegaard's back in that team, it's gonna be fun again. Not that it's always fun, I guess.
The interesting thing too is by game week 13, Arsenal will be playing West Ham away. I'd imagine that West Ham probably have a new manager at that point.
They may.
maybe Graham Potter bringing a little Gareth Southgate, something a little spicy to get the fans excited again.
Mm-hmm.
West Ham have been, but what I'm trying to say there
what about Greg Berhalter?
Oh my God. Don't get me started.
Cross it in. But real quickly, I just want to highlight Arsenal's fixtures after Nottingham Forest. They play West Ham away, United at home, Fulham away, Everton at home, Crystal Palace away, Ipswich at home, Brentford away. Those fixtures from 13 to 19. I think that's prime territory.
So let's look at those fixtures real fast. I have a question for you. So game week 13, they start with West Ham and then going down to Ipswich in game week 18.
Mm-hmm.
That is six fixtures right there. Out of those six fixtures, how many do you think Arsenal will clean sheet?
We'll get a clean sheet?
Yes.
West Ham should be a clean sheet. United, I think there's a lot of question marks about what they're going to be going forward. That one's speculative. I'm going to say yes, though. Okay. It's United at home. Maybe
so two for two at that point?
Yes. Fulham away, don't think they'll keep a clean sheet in that. I really don't. Everton at home, should keep a clean sheet. We'll say yes. Crystal Palace away, keep a clean sheet. Ipswich at home, keep a clean sheet.
Okay, so you
I think
see
five of six.
5 out of 6. Interesting. Okay.
Would you agree? Would you go? I bet you'd probably go more like 4 or 3, right?
Yeah, I'd be more in the 4 ballpark. I think United would probably score a goal.
Well, so I think the reason why I say that is if Odegaard comes back, he's fully healthy and everything, it's going to make the defense, it's going to make their lives so much easier. Because a lot of these situations where, like, I don't know, there's a lot of things behind this, but like, I think a lot of the positions that defenders have been put in by Arsenal and like the red card situations or like some of those different situations, that's the one with Saliba, like you just don't have the match control. So like you put people in positions where they make bad decisions, like playing the ball back over your center back's heads, and then they have to make a horrible decision, you know?
As you're saying that, and I am in complete agreement with what you're saying, I'm thinking back to my environmental scientist day. Oh, God. And Martin Odegaard is the keystone species of Arsenal.
Oh my God.
He's the one that provides the structure for their entire ecosystem.
Yeah, he is.
Think about gray wolves when they disappeared from Yellowstone.
there
I won't
go
into
that.
Inherently, we're basically saying the same thing, that Odegaard is one of the most important pieces of the machinery that makes up Arsenal. He's what makes them tick. He's what gives them the heart and the push, the drive. Without him, they haven't had that soul. They haven't had their heart in their attack. And also, as you're saying, defensively too, that feeds back onto the defense. Odegaard back changes things, and I think Arsenal are going to really, really start beating teams the way that people expect them to.
I think we're going to see through the festive run of fixtures, like we said, we'll talk about that next week when we do a podcast. But it's going to be... As an Arsenal fan, it's kind of scary. It's kind of exciting that we're going to see after the festive fixtures, we're going to see, I think, how the title race is going to play out for the rest of the season. We're going to learn a lot about these different teams, and obviously, Arsenal are getting Odegaard back, but then City not getting Rodri out, not getting him back. Are they going to figure it out is the question. And is Liverpool legit? It seems like they are. But like we talked about earlier, they have probably 4 more very, very difficult fixtures in their near future where we're going to kind of learn more about them too. So we'll see.
Well, I agree with that. I think it's time for us to move on from premiums for a little bit.
Okay.
What I want to talk about right now is trusting your gut as an FPL manager.
Yeah.
I have been really bad about this season, where sometimes I trust my gut too long, Phil Foden, and then not trusting my gut long enough when it's still telling me to stick with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And the person is Solanke. I sold him before his massive haul in game week 16. Game week 10.
16 points.
He had 16 points in game week 10. I made a big mistake by selling him because I find myself in a situation now where he's got a great fixture coming up. And if you haven't already guessed, I will be using my wild card in game week 12. So
what? We had no idea.
With that in mind, I did not trust myself to make the right choice here. And that's really frustrating for me because in the past, I've been really good about doing that. And the big reason here with Solanke is he has looked really good playing for Tottenham. He hasn't quite gotten the returns that indicate he's a great FPL asset. And Paul and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, where Paul and I were kind of on the same boat, where we were like, you know, I don't know if Solanke's been great. And he hasn't been for FPL, but he's been so good for Spurs. And yes, one of the things that I brought up to Paul was he's still making the runs. He's just not being found on the crosses or a through ball. The ball wasn't finding his feet. And this week, the ball found his feet.
What's funny is that Richarlison was the one that helped the ball find his feet. And Richarlison got hurt. So
yeah,
I'm not saying that's a big discourse in this discussion, but like, It's just funny that it was Richarlison on the left wing that found Solanke streaking through the middle, you know?
Poor Richarlison. I do feel bad for him picking up an injury after being on the field for, what, 5-10 minutes?
Got an assist, though.
He can't. To all the Richarlison FPL owners out there, we feel your pain, but at least you got some points.
Yeah, at least you got something out of it.
Yes, but so this is my ultimate point here, that if you have a gut feeling about a player and everyone in the community saying go one specific direction, if your gut tells you
fuck it
to go the opposite direction and you trust it, or you have some stats to back it up, if you're seeing something on the pitch no one else is and it makes sense to you, trust that gut feeling, because that's what I should have done. I should have trusted my gut and said, no, you know what? I see Solanke making the runs. He's holding up play really nicely. And Villa's high line is a perfect chance for him to feast.
Yeah.
I should have trusted my gut.
I think that's very fair, but I actually looked at that match leak and I assumed wrong. I thought Watkins was going to feast in that match on Spurs' back line, which was what they had. Who was it? Van de Ven was out. Like that, it's just a Spurs team that, I mean, I think it's really hard to read exactly who they are right now. Because, I mean, they've had some really good... I mean, they beat City. They beat the performance last week. I mean, like, they are a really good team, but I think they're just really still figuring it out, you know? Which is kind of crazy because it's you're already year two of Ainge. But, I mean, when you have Son out, when you have injuries, when you have all these different things, it's really hard to, like, put the pieces together. But it seems like maybe Solanke turned a corner last week.
And here's another point that I want to bring up for the potential of game week 11. Second game of the season. Spurs beat Everton 4-0 at home. Game week 5, they have Brentford at home. They win 3-1. West Ham at home, they win 4-1. Aston Villa at home in game week 10, they win 4-1. So there's a trend here, right? At home, they're a completely different team than they are when they're away. And Ipswich at home is one of the best fixtures we're going to see a team have throughout the course of the season.
That's a prime fixture.
Because there's so many different variables here, but Tottenham have created the most big chances. I know they've created the highest XG in the league. Ipswich have conceded the highest XG in the league. And it just feels like that there is a storm brewing to have Tottenham just go out and thrash Ipswich. We'll see what happens.
But it would fit the Spurs narrative of this year that Ipswich wins 1-0.
Yeah.
It would just fit the narrative so well about, I think, like, this isn't my Arsenal bias slipping through at all, but, like, I think they've been really just, like, bringing their fans high, dragging them low. And they just need to find that balance. And I think that's partly due to how they play. I think they're trying to, like I said, figure out who they think they are. There's a lot of things going on at the end of the day. But they have to find more of a solid baseline, realistically, I think, for them to do this over the long season. But it is a great fixture at the end of the day, Luke.
And what you were saying just now, I think it does apply to Tottenham very well. But I think that also applies to City. Because City find themselves in this point in the season where they've had a lot of injuries. A lot of players haven't been available. But they, casting my memory back, I cannot remember a time where they struggled this much before. Mm. I mean,
they struggled last year before Christmas.
They did, but not at this level. I mean, they losing three fixtures in a row, that is unheard of for them.
I don't know, but it's fucking great. Let me tell you.
Coming from the Arsenal fan here.
This is, I had a dream like this once and now I'm awake and it's great.
Oh my. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think, do you want to kind of highlight some, fixtures next week? I know we've talked more a little bit about fixtures, but we can maybe highlight some different things and then probably sign off. Cause I'm getting a little sleepy.
Yes. I think the best way to approach that is I'm going to give you my best 1 week punt. Just going into game week 11.
Are you
going
to give a player or?
Yeah, a player. Okay. Yeah.
I'll give one too then.
The player that I think is the best punny option out there at the moment is no one other than Heung-Min Son.
I think that's a good shout.
Son is currently at, let's look at, he's currently owned by 6.2% in the game.
Crazy.
When I looked at this yesterday, he was 5%. So quit transferring him in, people. Son has been in and out of the squad. He's been injured. His underlying stats do look pretty good when he's on the pitch, though. He's averaging about a goal involvement every, I would say he's averaging about half a goal involvement every match, which is really good considering everything. So when you look at Son, though, a lot of people are worried about how he's very wide out left on the pitch, that they think he's not entirely involved. I think he's instrumentally important to how they play because he opens up that half space.
Yeah.
But in this fixture against Ipswich, I think Son could absolutely feast. With the caveat, we need to make sure he's healthy for the fixture. Because I'm a little worried because he did play 55 minutes in this match. Postecoglou came out and said that we knew he wasn't going to play more than 50 to 60 minutes. It just wasn't going to happen. So maybe with an entire week's worth of rest, he's able to go 70 minutes, 80 minutes. But against Ipswich, it's possible they only need him for a half. Maybe a little more than that. But
it could be 6-0 at half.
It could be really bad. It could be really bad for Ipswich. For their sake, I hope it's not. But from an FPL perspective, strictly, I would love to see Spurs go run rampant here.
I mean, Ipswich may be canceling Calvin Phillips loan at halftime of this match. We'll see what happens.
I wouldn't put it past them.
We'll see what happens. But I really like that choice. Like, I think he's such an underrated asset in this game. And yeah, his price point's a little high for somebody that's not going to play as much, but he is a great option going forward. If I had to pick anybody for this game week, I really like Bruno Fernandes.
I thought you'd go there.
I don't know, man. I just think that with the new manager bounce of an interim manager, he had a penalty last week. He's always going to be creating chances, and it seems like he's more of in like that free-floating role up top rather than kind of like getting like playing more of a box-to-box. Like, he's kind of more in the creative side of things. I don't know. It just, to me, it sounds like a little bit of a spicy option. And I mean, what is his percentage owned? Like, I mean, playing Leicester at home, I mean, that's...
Oh, I can figure that out real quick. I'll tell you in a second. How would you feel, Paul, yes, about someone not wild carding, free hitting in game week 11?
I don't think it's horrible. I mean, I think there's good fixtures to target. I mean, you have United playing Leicester at home. You have, of course, Spurs playing Ipswich. You could argue that Wolves playing Southampton is really spicy for Wolves. Fulham playing Crystal Palace. I mean, Fulham have some good assets there that are lower tier medium price assets. If you're going to free hit, that you could take a chance against Crystal Palace, who is also going to be without Wharton this week too. So they're just even more decimated than usual. And then from there, I mean, I'm really interested. This is kind of a side topic that I won't go too much of a tangent on, but I'm really interested to see Nottingham Forest play Newcastle.
Yeah, that'll be a fun match.
I think there's a chance that we're going to see this vaunted Nottingham Forest defense. I think we may see it fall apart this week.
Here's the thing, though.
I think Isak is going to terrorize them.
There's a lot. There are a ton of Premier League fixtures in game week 11 that teams are going to get caught out, I think. I could easily see something happening where City are struggling right now. This Brighton team under Hurzler,
yeah,
has been moving really differently, right? They have returned in a lot of fixtures that people didn't think they were going to. And I could see them stealing points against City.
I mean, you're going to see probably a Danny Welbeck falling.
Screamer.
A screamer or a goal where he like falls and then the ball bounces off his head and somehow goes in
the
goal.
Here's my question to you, though. So,
I mean, I'm there for it.
One of our favorite podcast guests out there, Kyle, he currently has Danny Welbeck in his team. How does he feel when Danny Welbeck goes for a brace against City, his beloved...
For four straight L's.
His beloved men. How do you think that would feel? It would be very conflicting, I would imagine.
I don't think he'd like it. I think Kyle's I think Kyle's in the same situation as me, where like if I have enough Bielasa that's ever playing Arsenal, which I had Salah last week, I was still very upset Arsenal lost. And I to me understandable. It's like one matters a lot more than the other, you know?
Fair enough. Yep. I think,
but at the end of the day, I would absolutely love for Danny Welbeck to score a couple bangers against City. That'd be great.
It does feel like it's poetically, from a storytelling perspective, Danny Welbeck with a brace against City at home. That makes perfect sense to me. It does. That feels like it is scripted perfectly by the Premier League. So,
talking about the Premier League scripting things, I mean,
oh God,
actually,
oh God,
pause. We're not going
to let's not go there. That could be another hour long podcast if Paul gets into it. So,
yeah,
I think that is going to pretty much do it for us. We will be back with you all next week during the barren wasteland that is the international break. We're going to talk about getting ready for the festive fixtures, probably go over a little bit review of what's happened so far during that current international break, how players are performing, what teams are performing well, and if there's any injuries as well. So with that being said, if you are going to be wildcarding into game week 12, go ahead and pop that wild card as soon as game week 11 is done, because you want to make sure you're catching those price rises over the international break. So keep that in mind as you're going through that. Paul, do you have any final thoughts for the listeners out there?
Well, I was going to bring up the playing the wild card early thing, but you basically covered that. But no, I think like we've talked about in this podcast, we're going to kind of do a deep dive into the festive fixtures. Sorry, my brain's just done, but that's going to be a like such an instrumental part of your FPL season. So go ahead and start doing research now. It doesn't have to be anything too intensive, but kind of figure out what players you think you need going forward. And if you have a wild card, or if you don't, like Kyle, go ahead and plan it out. You know, I'm sorry, I can't help but to pal on Kyle on the podcast when he's not here and sitting here doing bad.
Here at the end of the podcast, though, Paul, I just want to applaud myself. I only talked about Flecken once in the pod, so God. We'll make that two now. But as Paul said, we hope you guys have a great rest of your week. And thank you for joining us for this podcast. It's been a lot of fun. We'll be back with you next week to talk about getting ready for those festive fixtures and the international break.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.